This Father's Day at Lowe's, score free gifts for the greatest dad. Right now, get a free select DeWalt, Craftsman, or Kobalt tool with purchase of a select battery kit. Plus, get a free Werner 2-foot aluminum ladder when you buy an 8-foot fiberglass ladder. Shop these deals and more this Father's Day at Lowe's. We help, you save. Valid through 6/15 while supplies last. Selection varies by location.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. Ayman al-Zawahiri is dead. Born 1951. What now for Al-Qaeda? Short-term, long-term. I welcome Cole Bunzel, fellow at the Hoover Institution, editor of the blog Jihadica, writing at Foreign Affairs magazine about the road ahead for an organization that terrorized planet Earth for the first two decades of the 21st century. And then, Cole, congratulations and very good evening for summing up clearly that Zawahiri was no great public speaker, but he liked to write. You report to me that he has published in Arabic two books of great thickness, a 500-page memoir and an 850-page political theory diary. Who was he when he was, before he was Al-Qaeda? Was he a scholar? Was he a teacher? Where did he learn to spend so much time writing? Good evening to you.
Good evening, and thanks for having me, John. It's a pleasure to be here. Ayman al-Zawahiri, as you said, was an Egyptian national born in 1951, born around outside Cairo. He comes from a prestigious family, both sides, with prestigious members in politics and in literature and medicine. His father was a medical doctor, and he followed him in that profession. He himself became a surgeon. How he became such a writer probably has something to do with his upbringing and having that sort of background. So he basically kind of tracks with the history of the Sunni jihadi movement that sort of begins with Sayyid Qutb in the 1960s, and this idea that the rulers in the Islamic world are not good Muslim rulers. They're actually apostates, and therefore jihad against them, that is armed jihad, is necessary to overthrow those regimes, to replace them with proper Islamic states that rule by the Sharia. Of course, that project was unsuccessful in the 1980s and the 1990s. It resulted in the assassination of Egyptian President Anwar Sadat in 1981. Ayman al-Zawahiri was implicated in that event, but he had no major role in it, though he did serve a 3-year, perhaps 4-year prison term in Egypt for his role. And he's known as somebody who actually had to rat out some of his colleagues. And for that, he had a kind of controversial reputation from the beginning. But he left Egypt. Then he goes to Pakistan and Afghanistan. He never goes back to Egypt after about 1984.
And he merges with bin Laden. What did they have in common? Bin Laden, an Arab, a Saudi prince. And as you say, this is a scrivener, a man who's raised to have very close reading of text, not to make a vast strategic pronouncements. So how did the two men work together? Do we know?
Well, it's an interesting combination because around this time, what they both had in common was that they were both kind of in exile from their countries. They were unwanted men. Ayman al-Zawahiri could not go back to Egypt. It wasn't safe for him. And bin Laden was increasingly estranged from Saudi Arabia. When they first met, bin Laden was still a loyal subject to the Saudis. So over time, that would change for him. Eventually, though, bin Laden came around to this idea that it was necessary to change these regimes. So basically, he adopted Ayman al-Zawahiri's idea about the necessity of jihad. But he tweaked it, and he had this idea of going after what he called the far enemy, which was the United States. The United States was, in his view, responsible for allowing these regimes like Egypt, like Iraq, to basically exist in the first place. And so in the Al-Qaeda worldview that both bin Laden and then later Zawahiri came to adopt, the principal target of armed jihad had to be the United States. Get the United States, get them to leave the Middle East, allow us then to proceed with our revolutionary warfare.
Bin Laden is dead in 2011, and the assumption logically is that Zawahiri will be the new leader of Al-Qaeda. And yet in your foreign affairs, you make it very clear that his record as leader of Al-Qaeda was wanting. First, you mentioned that he puts out a number of audios and some TV as well. But he wasn't a compelling speaker. This is no rhetorician. At the same time, in 2013, he runs up against al-Baghdadi, a pseudonym, who founds ISIS, and Zawahiri opposes ISIS, and Baghdadi pushes back. Zawahiri doesn't seem to be a man who is politically astute. He assumed, I guess, obedience, and when it didn't come, he had no fallback position. Is that correct, Carl?
That's absolutely correct. He was a man who was outwitted and who was outplayed by men who he believed were his subordinates. And that includes, in the first place, Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi, who, as you said, was the leader of ISIS. But at the time of the kind of formation of ISIS, when it was originally given that name in 2013, Ayman al-Zawahiri saw him as a subordinate, as someone whom he could control. And when he announced this expansion, that is when Baghdadi announced this expansion from Iraq into Syria, thereby creating this new emirate, this expanded emirate called ISIS, Zawahiri said, no, you can't do this. He sent a letter, which was intercepted by Al Jazeera, basically telling Baghdadi to go back into Iraq, and even saying, you know, your role as the leader of the Islamic State of Iraq is going to be limited to 1 year. Maybe we'll have a replacement for you. And so this was the beginning of ISIS saying, OK, this is an old man who we don't actually respect in the first place. We're not loyal to Al-Qaeda anymore. Bin Laden was great. Zawahiri is not. And he's not somebody with the prestige, with the charisma of a bin Laden. We can defy him with no consequences. And that's exactly what happened, because as soon as ISIS took over large swaths of Iraq and Syria and declared the caliphate the next year in 2014, Al-Qaeda was eclipsed. It was an afterthought. It still had some branches, and it would still make some progress in other areas. But in Iraq and in Syria, it was basically finished.
The lesson here might be that authors don't make great dictators. You know, there are other examples in history. So let's move past ISIS and Baghdadi and look at the Syrian civil war, where Al-Qaeda also has not played a prominent role. You mentioned Africa, North Africa, the Islamic Maghreb, the Islam, Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula. These are subsets that have been local authorities. However, right. Zawahiri then becomes a recluse. How to regard him after 2016, after the Syrian civil war rejected his advice? Was he understood as a man who just wrote and let others take decisions?
Yeah, he was known for writing these kinds of directives and providing general strategic guidance to the affiliates in Africa, East Africa, North Africa, later in an affiliate in Pakistan. But when it came to actually, you know, managing the affairs of the larger Al-Qaeda network, he was not, you know, really involved himself. And there were times, including in 2015 and 2016, when he was off the grid completely and inaccessible by his subordinates, which was a factor that would be cited by the Syrian branch of Al-Qaeda in 2016 when it decided to decamp from Al-Qaeda entirely. So after settling that dispute against Baghdadi, or as he thought he would, settling it against Baghdadi in 2013, he allowed, in his view, this Syrian affiliate of Al-Qaeda to prevail. That Al-Qaeda affiliate did continue to exist, but over time it realized that it wasn't getting anything from its affiliation with Al-Qaeda. It was actually harming it and its ambitions to become a larger part of the Syrian civil war. This was called Jabhat al-Nusra. And so by 2017, the group had renounced Al-Qaeda. It said, we have nothing to do with any external entity. And Zawahiri, as soon as he gets back on the grid, this is in early 2017, he starts condemning the group for this violation of the Oath of Allegiance.
He dies in Kabul as a guest of the Taliban, we can presume, because his residence was connected to the Haqqanis. Was he an embarrassment right. for the Taliban?
I think it's certainly an embarrassment that he was found and killed in Kabul. There are different wings of the Taliban. As you mentioned, the Haqqani network is the most militant, the most aggressive, the most ideologically extreme faction of the Taliban, and they are wedded to Al-Qaeda. And it was the Haqqani network that, as far as we can tell from what's been leaked in the press by American officials, the Haqqani network that was in, that had invited Ayman al-Zawahiri to Kabul and was protecting him. But other parts of the Taliban that want international recognition, that want a seat at the UN, that want the sanctions lifted, it's a huge embarrassment to them for the leader of al-Qaeda to have been in the capital of Afghanistan, particularly given the pledges that the Taliban had made to the United States that it would not allow al-Qaeda to essentially operate on their territory.
Finally, Cole, because it's the history of al-Qaeda to this day, the future is unclear. There are two possible successors, but they both live in Iran. That doesn't make them exactly inspirational figures. So as you close your piece, you say the future is unclear. Is this a crisis of al-Qaeda right now? Are we in a possible existential failure moment? 30 seconds.
I think it is a possible existential moment. You have these two leaders. They're presumed to be in Iran, Saif al-Adel and Abdurrahman al-Maghribi. And they've both been men in the shadows, men with no real history of leading an organization out in the front. There's no successor, no one waiting in the wings like there was after the death of bin Laden with Zawahiri. So where we go from here with al-Qaeda, it's very unclear.
Cole Bunzel, Hoover Institution, editor of the blog Jihadica. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.